ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद्गीता चैप्टर 4 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड ट्रांसेंडेंटल नॉलेज टेक्स्ट 13 चातुर्वर्ण्यं मया सृष्टं गुणकर्म विभागशः तस्य कर्तारमपि माम् विद्यकर्तारमव्ययम् चातुर्वर्ण्यं मया सृष्टम् ट्रान्स्लेशन् अण्ड् पर्पोर्ट् बै हिस् डिवैन् ग्रेस् एसी भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद ट्रान्स्लेशन् अकार्डिङ्ग् टु द त्री मोड्स् आफ् मेटीरियल् नेचर् अण्ड् दि वर्क् असोसियेटेड् वित् दम् The four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. Purport. The Lord is the creator of everything. Everything is born of Him. Everything is sustained by Him. And everything after annihilation rests in Him. He is therefore the creator of the four divisions of the social order, beginning with the intelligent class of men, technically called Brahmanas, due to their being situated in the mode of goodness. Next is the administrative class, technically called the Kshatriyas, due to their being situated in the mode of passion. The mercantile men, called the Vaishyas, are situated in the mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And the Shudras, or laborer class, are situated in the ignorant mode of material nature. In spite of his creating the four divisions of human society, Lord Krishna does not belong to any of these divisions, because he is not one of the conditioned souls, a section of whom form human society. Human society is similar to any other animal society. But to elevate men from the animal status, the above-mentioned divisions are created by the Lord for the systematic development of Krishna consciousness. The tendency of a particular man towards work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired. Such symptoms of life, according to the different modes of material nature, are described in the 18th chapter of this book. A person in Krishna consciousness, however, is above even the Brahmanas. Although Brahmanas by quality are supposed to know about Brahman, the Supreme Absolute Truth, most of them approach only the impersonal Brahman manifestation of Lord Krishna. But a man who transcends the limited knowledge of a Brahmana and reaches the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, becomes a person in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, a Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness includes knowledge of all different plenary expansions of Krishna, namely Ram, Narsingha, Varaha, etc. And as Krishna is transcendental to this system of the four divisions of human society, a person in Krishna consciousness is also transcendental to all divisions of human society, whether we consider the divisions of community, nation, or species. Om Agyan. So, welcome all the devotees and the guests for the evening Bhagavad Gita class. So, today we are speaking from the 4th chapter, 13th verse, in which Krishna is saying, According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. And although I am the creator of this system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. So this chapter is entitled Transcendental Knowledge. So every person in this world is actually trying to get some knowledge. People are studying either engineering or medicine or arts or economics. Some people pursuing, they going to different lines in order to get some knowledge. Because knowledge is actually very powerful. Because when we get knowledge, we get power and influence. Bhagavad Gita also gives knowledge, but it gives transcendental knowledge. So there is difference between material knowledge and transcendental knowledge. Material knowledge, it can, like, knowledge by itself, it solves certain problems of life. So material knowledge, such as, like, for example, somebody is studying automobile engineering. Like, one will learn how to make, like, fast cars, how to make efficient cars which will not give rise to much pollution, which can run faster. When somebody studying medicine, he tries to get that knowledge in order to cure certain diseases. So in this way, different knowledge solves different problems. But transcendental knowledge, what problems will it solve? This will solve the problem of birth, old age, disease and death. So when we take the material knowledge, like if you are able to develop some fastest cars, okay, we may be able to develop fastest cars, but at the same time still, it's not that your problems will not stop in your life. You'll meet with accidents, you'll get disease, ultimately you'll have to die. So the real problems are actually birth, old age, disease and death. In fact, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if a person simply understands that birth, old age, disease and death as a problem, that itself shows that is a sign of intelligence. So many people actually do not even understand what is the real problem of life. Like if somebody is pursuing like PhD, like first 2 years of his PhD will go in actually determining what is the problem he is going to solve. So first 2 years he has to spend on what the problem he has to solve. So similarly, people are trying to solve different problems, but actually, first of all, we have to realize what is actually the real problem. Because the real problem means it should be common to everyone. It is not that only certain people have this problem. Like suppose somebody is during the rainy season, like it's a problem for everyone. So one goes to buy umbrellas because it's a problem rainy season. But then person who is selling umbrellas, for him he would like to have the whole year to be rainy season only, because he'll get more business. So these problems are very relative. But real problems are birth, old age, disease and death, because they are common to everyone. Whether somebody is a rich person or a poor person. So these are the real problems. And not only that, problem means nobody should want it and nobody can avoid it. There are some problems, like it may be some people may not want it, but some people... Like for example, like we have this Guru Puja Kirtan every day in the morning. Just now, just before this class, we had a Kirtan. So for that, devotees were singing in the mic. We have this Guru Puja Kirtan morning 7:45 onwards. On Sundays we use mic, but on other days, because of certain sound constraints, we don't use mic. But for those devotees who have to sing Guru Puja, it is actually difficult for them, because like they have to put more effort to sing, they have to sing loudly. But somehow we can't use because of the constraints. So for them, for a person who is actually singing Guru Puja, it is a problem because he has to have a loud voice. But for a person who wants to copy in the exam, like for example, suppose in the last bench he is sitting, and then he wants to ask the other person, can you tell me the answer of this question? So if he is having a loud voice, it's a problem for him. Because even if he speaks very like short, then immediately the examiner will understand, oh, this person is asking the other person. So certain problems are, having a loud voice is a problem for a person who wants to copy, but it's not a problem for one who wants to sing. So people are trying to solve problems, but these problems are actually very relative. So the real problems are actually birth, old age, disease and death. Bhagavad Gita gives solution to these problems. So that is why this chapter is entitled Transcendental Knowledge, because by getting this transcendental knowledge, we can conquer the real problems, which are birth, old age, disease and death. So why actually Krishna gives transcendental knowledge in this chapter? If we just go back a little bit, what is the connection between the third chapter and the fourth chapter? For example, in the third chapter, Krishna, in various places, he spoke about the glories of transcendental knowledge. In the third chapter, in the 28th verse, he said, a person who does not have transcendental knowledge, he will be attached to the results of his activities. But a person who has transcendental knowledge, he will also work in the same manner as a person who is attached to the fruits of activities. But because he is having the transcendental knowledge, he will not get any reactions for his activities. So transcendental knowledge is that knowledge which distinguishes a sakama karma yogi from a nishkama karma yogi. So sakama karma yogi means one who is attached to the fruits of the activities. Because he does not have a transcendental knowledge, he is actually attached to the fruits. But a nishkama karma yogi is one who is not attached to the fruits. For example, we perform activities, but we are very much attached to the fruits. If we don't get the fruits, then we will become disturbed. But a nishkama karma yogi will not be attached to the fruits because he has the transcendental knowledge. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Shri Shri Gaurnitai ki jai, Shri Gopalji ki jai. So in this way, Krishna glorified transcendental knowledge. And not only, at the end of third chapter, he said, the real enemy of a person is actually lust or the enjoying propensity. And why the lust is called the greatest enemy? Because it covers the real knowledge of a living entity. Because it covers the real knowledge of the living entity, that is why it is the greatest enemy. So in this way, Krishna actually indirectly glorified the position of transcendental knowledge. And also in the 43rd verse, in the last verse of the third chapter, Krishna said that when a person gets transcendental knowledge, it will give the person the intelligence to overcome the lusty desires or the enjoying propensity. So that is the power of transcendental knowledge. So in this way, because Krishna glorified transcendental knowledge in the third chapter, so Krishna starts speaking transcendental knowledge in the fourth chapter. So we'll just have a brief recap of the previous verses so that we understand in what context Krishna is speaking this particular verse. Because many times people think that maybe Bhagavad Gita is some kind of a disjoint, like different verses are not connected. But actually, Krishna is giving a very systematic presentation. Like for example, today I was talking to the devotees. Like suppose if you see a particular book, it's a very big book, but then it contains like no titles or chapters, then just by see, seeing the book, you'll get headache. Such a big book I have to read. So you may think, oh, everything is disconnected. There is no connection between different chapters. But in Bhagavad Gita, it's not some kind of a vague book. It is actually a scientific book. Science means what? In the scientific book, everything is presented systematically. Step by step. Science means what? Like, there is an axiom, there is a hypothesis, and then there is a theory. And then you perform some experiment, and then by performing the experiment, you should be able to verify the theory. If you cannot verify the theory by performing the experiment, then there is no, it cannot be called a science. It is simply a belief. So Bhagavad Gita is also a science because it is systematically presented. And then when we actually practice the Gita, we will be able to get some results by which we can actually we can verify the theory which is given in the Bhagavad Gita. So when Krishna starts speaking the transcendental knowledge, in the first two verses of this chapter, Krishna gives the history of Bhagavad Gita. What is this history of the Gita? So it's a very interesting verse where Krishna is saying, I first instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivaswan. And Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Like few years back, I had taken one devotee. One devotee was supposed to undergo some operation for kidney stone. So I had taken him to one particular clinic. It's famous. That clinic is especially famous for actually kidney stones. They specialize in actually performing surgery for kidney stones. So in that particular clinic, I saw that chief doctor, he has actually, his name is there in the Guinness Book of Records. Because he removed a stone of the size of something like, if you remember properly, some 13, I don't know, centimeters or millimeters, I don't know which. Some very big stone from the kidney of a particular person through some particular surgery. Because he removed such a big stone, like his name was there in the Guinness Book of Records. So when I was talking to some medical students, he told them that suppose if you get to meet with a person, if you get to meet with such a person who is actually surgeon, who is actually, whose name is there in the Guinness Book of Records. Like suppose if you get to meet such a person for half an hour, like what will you converse with him? What will you talk to him? So different people were giving different answers. So they were saying like, I would like to know, like, one of the person, he said like, I would like to ask him, like, which college did he study? Like, how did he get, achieve expertise in that subject? So this is a natural thing. Suppose you are working as a, you are studied BCom or MCom or something. You get to meet with a particular person who is like a CFO of a particular company. Then immediately you would want to know, like, which college did you study? Or suppose you meet with a person from your village who is in a very big position. So you would like to know, like, which college did you study, isn't it? So when a person has certain power and influence, like, we would like to know from where he got the power. Where did he actually study? How did he achieve that power? So people are attracted by power and influence. So here, it is very interesting. Like, Krishna is saying that I first instructed this knowledge to the sun god Vivaswan. So different people have power and influence in this world. But their power and influence are very limited. Somebody is a big doctor, he has certain influence. But only over a limited section of people. Limited, that too in only limited city or something like that. Somebody is like a chief minister, he has influence over the small state. Somebody is a prime minister, he has influence over the whole country. Or somebody is a president, or somebody is like president of United States, he has influence over many countries. Because America is controlling many countries. But then, sun god, Vivaswan, he has influence over all planetary systems. Prabhupada is quoting in the purport, he says, sun planet is controlling all other planets by giving heat and light. In fact, if there is no sun, actually there will not be any life in the... we cannot live only. In fact, all the energies which we actually have in our world, we can ultimately trace the energies to the sun god, Vivaswan. So sun is influencing all the planets. And sun god Vivaswan is the CEO of sun planet. That means he has influence over all the planetary systems. And such a person, sun god, is a student of Gita. So then you can imagine what is the power of transcendental knowledge. What is the power of the knowledge given in the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is actually, in the first two verses, is glorifying the position of transcendental knowledge by giving the history of the Gita. He's saying that even sun god Vivaswan was a student of Gita. So to cut short, we'll go a little ahead. So then in the third verse, like Krishna says, like, why actually Krishna chose Arjuna to give this transcendental knowledge? Because Krishna is saying that you are my dear friend and devotee, so that is why I am giving the transcendental knowledge to you. And then further, and then as soon as Krishna speaks this verse, Arjuna immediately asks the question, how is it that you gave knowledge to sun god? Because sun god is very much senior by birth to you. How did you impart this knowledge to sun god? Then immediately Krishna gives the answer in the fifth verse. He says that he tells the difference between Krishna himself and the living entity. He says that living entity does not remember what actually he went through in his previous lives. But I am not like an ordinary living entity. I know what happened in all my previous lives. I also know what you all went through, what all the living entities have gone through in all the previous lives. So Krishna is saying that I remember everything. So then in the sixth verse he says, but then many demons will not appreciate that. How is it they will not be able to understand the transcendental nature of Lord? How is it that he can remember everything? How is it that Krishna can remember all the previous lives? We can hardly remember what happened 1 week back. If I ask you a question like, what did you do exactly 1 week back this time? You have to little think for a while and then do it. So people, we hardly remember that. What to speak of remembering all the millions of lifetimes before? Then when demons hear that, how can Krishna remember so many lifetimes, what happened so many lifetimes back? Somebody may ask the question. So immediately in the sixth verse, Krishna is talking about the transcendental nature of his own body. Krishna is saying that I can remember what happened in all my previous lives because I do not have a body like one of you. Because the bodies which you have, by which you will be able to forget, you will be forgetting what happened the previous day. But I don't have a material body, I have a transcendental body. This ajopisan avyayatma, bhutanam ishwaropisan. So Krishna is giving the transcendental knowledge about his birth and his spiritual form. My body is completely transcendental. And then in the 7th and 8th verse, Krishna is actually giving the reasons for his appearance. And one may wonder, if Krishna is a person who has a transcendental body, and which is unlike the material body. Material body goes through birth, old age, disease, and that person takes birth and then grows for some time. It stays for some time, after some time it decays and then one dies. And then Krishna's body is not like that. So then, if Krishna is such a powerful person, why is it that he actually comes to this material world? Like for example, suppose a person is living in the Dharavi. Suppose our Mukesh Ambani or Anil Ambani is coming to Dharavi to do food for life. And one will want to know, like, why is it that he is coming to the... material coming to Dharavi to do food for life, one may wonder. So then, similarly, one may wonder, if Krishna is having such a transcendental body, why does Krishna come to this material world, in which so many miseries are there? Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to call this material world as a toilet. Toilet, a person will not go, like when a person goes to a toilet, he will just want to finish up his business and then come back. He will not want to stay in the toilet. So similarly, this material world is actually a place of misery. So why, if Krishna is so great, if he is having a transcendental body, why does he come to the material world? So then Krishna gives the reasons for his appearance in the 7th and 8th verse. So in brief, the reasons for his appearance is, Krishna is saying to establish the religious principles, to protect the devotees and to annihilate the demons. So we will not go into the details of that. They were already covered. And then one may ask the question that when a person understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities, what is the result of such a knowledge? Okay, in the 7th and 8th verse, in the 6th verse, Krishna told about the nature of his transcendental form. Krishna told about the reasons for his appearance. So when a person understands this, what will be the result? So Krishna is saying, when a person understands, janma karma chame divyam, evam yoveti tatvataha, tyaktva deham punar janma, naiti mamyeti sorjuna. Such a person will never take birth again in the material world. No more birth. Simply by understanding that you will stop your birth, old age, disease and death. Then in the 10th verse, Krishna says, Krishna is actually going beyond simply knowing about Krishna to the state of absorption in Krishna. In the 9th verse, Krishna said, if a person simply knows about my nature of my appearance and activities, one will never take birth again. So simply knowledge about Krishna. But in the 10th verse, Krishna is actually going one step beyond. Beyond knowledge about Krishna to the state of absorption in Krishna. Or how to get love for Krishna. So it's a very interesting verse. Krishna says, Vita raga bayakroda manmaya mam upashrita. Bhagavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. Says that how do we get knowledge about God? How do we get love of God? Not knowledge. How does a person love of God? Basically, three qualifications. One has to become freed from fear, attachment, with raga, bhaya. Fear, attachment and anger. So what is the nature of attachment and fear and anger? Because in the previous verse, Krishna said, my birth and activities are transcendental. Janma karma chame divyam. It is not material like one of us. It is transcendental. So, but many people will not accept that Krishna's birth and activities are transcendental. They will be opposed to the idea that Krishna's birth and activities are transcendental. Many people are, when a person takes to Krishna consciousness, many people will actually will pass comments like, why are you practicing spirituality? You are chanting Hare Krishna, like, have you seen God? When are you going to see God? So what is this doing? So many people are opposed to Krishna consciousness. So Krishna is saying, in order to get love of God, one has to be freed from attachment to those people who are opposed to the idea that my birth and activities are transcendental. Like when a person takes to spirituality, he will get opposition from many of his friends and relatives and family members. So one has to be become freed from attachment to such people. And when a person normally becomes free from attachment to such people, then there is a tendency that he may become angry towards such people. But then Krishna is saying, you should not only be freed from attachment to those people who are opposed to Krishna consciousness, you should also be freed from anger towards those people who are opposed to Krishna consciousness. That means you should not hate the person. You should hate the sin, but not the sinner. And not only that, you should be freed from fear of those people who are opposed to Krishna consciousness. So when you have these three qualifications, then one will get love of Krishna. Like few days back, we celebrated Narsingh Chaturthasi. Prahlad Maharaj had all these qualifications. So Hiranyakashipu, everyone opposed Prahlad Maharaj in his practice of Krishna consciousness, especially Hiranyakashipu. But Prahlad Maharaj was not attached to Hiranyakashipu. Nor was he freed, he was also not afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Not only that, he was not having any anger towards Hiranyakashipu, although Hiranyakashipu tortured him so much. So that is a qualification. Then in the 11th verse, then one may ask the question, okay, 10th verse talked about how to get love of Krishna. Then one may ask the question, what occurs when someone takes shelter of Krishna with something other than the desire to achieve transcendental love for him? What if suppose comes to Krishna with a motive other than to get love for Krishna? So Krishna says, Yeyata mam prapadyante. As a person approaches me, I reciprocate accordingly. So then in the 12th verse, Krishna says that, somebody may ask the question that, if Krishna gives a soul whatever he wants, if a person approaches Krishna with a certain attitude, Krishna will reciprocate. If Krishna gives a person whatever he wants, then why don't persons approach Krishna for everything? Why do people approach other gods? So then, because Krishna is saying that if a person approaches me with any desire, then I will reciprocate accordingly. If a person comes to me, if he wants some house, or if he wants gets promotion in the job, if he wants a job, I will reciprocate. If Krishna is going to fulfill everything, then why do people not approach Krishna? Why do the people approach different people? So Krishna is saying, Kankshanta Karmanam Siddhim. Because people want to fulfill their desires very fast. So that is why people approach other demigods. Because they think, maybe if I approach Krishna, maybe it will take more time. Maybe Krishna will take more time to fulfill my desires. So better let me approach other gods. So this Krishna speaks in the 12th verse. And finally we come to the 13th verse. So one may ask the question, okay, one worships a demigod. One may worship a demigod because he wants to fulfill his desires fast. Or one may worship an impersonal form of God. Or some other person worships Krishna directly. So that means, one may ask the question, does Krishna, the supreme Ishwara, the supreme controller, control everyone's desires? Krishna is actually the supreme controller. God, by definition, is the supreme controller. So if every person is approaching different demigod or different people to fulfill their desires, I want to know, is actually Krishna the controller of everyone's desires? One may ask the question. One may ask that, is it Krishna who decides that one will be a materialist, another a devotee, or yet another a struggling spiritual aspirant? Is Krishna responsible for the pain and pleasure of everyone in this world? So then Krishna says this verse, Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. Krishna says, I have created this Varnashram system consisting of four Varnas and four Ashramas. Although I have created this system, you should know that I am the non-doer. I am not the doer, Akartaram. Avyayam, I am unchangeable. So Krishna is saying that I am not responsible for everyone's desires. I am not the doer. So let us try to understand this verse. So Prabhupada is saying in the purport, the Lord is the creator of everything. So when we see a wonderful creation, there is a creator behind it. Like suppose, like somebody is having admitted into the hospital. Doctor examines the patient. He takes the ECG. ECG is normal. He takes the X-ray. X-ray is perfectly normal. He sees the blood pressure normal. CT scan, MRI, blood test, everything is normal. Then finally doctor declares patient is dead. Does it make actually any sense? No, it does not make actually any sense. So similarly, when a people see wonderful creation in the world, but then when they say that there is no creator, actually it does not make any sense. Like for example, there is something called anomalous behavior of water. Like when you freeze a particular item, the density will increase. But then when you freeze water, its actually density decreases. Water has the maximum density at 4 degrees Celsius. When you freeze the water below 4 degrees Celsius, when it becomes ice cube, it actually its density decreases. Because of that, water floats in the water. The ice cube floats in water. So because ice cube has less density, because of that it floats in the water, that is why the living organisms are sustained below the surface of the ice cube. So there is actually perfect order and design. But scientists call it anomalous behavior of water. So it is actually perfect order and design by God. Like for example, like Ganges water. Like when a river gets contaminated, like for example, like in the America, practically there is no drinking water available in any of the rivers. Because all the rivers are contaminated by so many nuclear waste which are given by different industries. But practically all the rivers are contaminated. So when the river gets contaminated, in order to purify the river, you have to put so much of effort, you have to put so much of external agents. Many aquatics die, so you have to put so much of new aquatics into the river. But in the case of Ganges, even if the Ganges gets polluted, you don't have to purify the Ganges through external means. It is a recorded fact in the scientific journal that Ganges contains inbuilt mechanism by which it can actually counteract the pollution. In fact, it is said that when you get a Ganges water, it never decays. So what is this thing? There is perfect order and design. I mean, there must be a creator behind it. We can actually go on with many examples, but we will not go ahead. So Krishna, this Varnashram system is actually created by God. So what is this Varnashram system? There are these four social orders and four spiritual orders. The social orders are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmanas are the intelligent class, Kshatriyas are the administrative class, Vaishyas are the mercantile class, and Shudras are the laborer class. And the spiritual orders are Brahmacharya, the student, Grahastha, the householder, Vanaprastha, the retired life, and the Sannyasis are the renounced life. So Krishna has created this system. So because Krishna has created this system is even prevalent, even now prevalent. Like when Prabhupada was conversing with a philosopher, with a professor in Russia, Prabhupada was saying, according to communists, everything is equal, everyone is equal. There is no, everyone has the same facilities. And Prabhupada said, it is actually artificial. Because, everyone has got a particular, even in the communist, society, there are certain people who are intelligent people, they are professors, because they are actually intelligent class of people. And there are certain people who are actually administering. Certain people are working in the companies and factories. Certain people are doing business. So we see that there is no equalities. Different people have different natures. Based on that, different people have they are doing different occupational duties. So because Krishna has created the system, so even now the system is prevalent, although not in the perfect sense. And Prabhupada would say that this Varnashram system is like an elephant. Whether the elephant is dead or alive, it has value. If the elephant is alive, it can perform Herculean tasks. It can uproot trees, it can carry huge things. If the elephant is dead, still it has so much a value, because the ivory from the elephant, it is so costly. So many things can be made. So similarly, one devotee was doing maha cleaning. the ladder. So there was like one lady who had come wearing different awkward kinds of dresses. So this devotee came exactly near to him and asked, so this devotee was little reserved and was like, was afraid, like, what is she going to ask me? Then this lady asked, Thakurji ka pat kab kulega? This devotee was completely taken aback because he never expected that a person who was dressed in some Western clothing, she would speak such pure Hindi. So like even this, such words were not used in Bombay also. He was completely taken aback. So he was saying that although in India, like the Vedic culture is actually slowly degrading, people are adapting to the Western way of life, but still actually people have some culture. People have know certain values in their life. Because that is the power of Varnashram system, that although it is degraded, but still people know certain values. And then especially the important word which Krishna is using is guna karma vibhagashah. Krishna is saying, I have created this Varnashram system based on one's qualities and activities, guna and karma. So Krishna never uses the word janma or birth. So many people think that if a person, only a person who actually has taken birth in the Brahmana family, he can become a Brahmana. But actually it is not so. Krishna is not using the word janma. So even actually if you use little common sense, it does not make sense. Just because one is the son of a doctor, can he be a doctor? No. If somebody is a son of a doctor, he has good chances of becoming a doctor. But still he has to get the qualifications of a doctor. So similarly, if somebody is a son of a Brahmana, he has good chances of becoming a Brahmana because of being brought up in a nice family. But then he has to acquire the qualifications. So we see actually in the Vedic culture, for example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a great sage known as Suta Goswami. He says, Aho vayam janma vritadya hasma, vriddhanu vrityapi viloma jata. He says that although I am born in a mixed family, actually low family, low caste, but still I have become elevated in my birth simply by associating with great devotees, simply by serving the great devotees and simply by hearing from great devotees. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, very wonderful purport, he says that Shukadeva Goswami, if you don't know Shukadeva Goswami, Shukadeva Goswami is the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. When Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, he did not hesitate to speak Srimad Bhagavatam, although in the same assembly, there were so many unqualified people were also present, who were not born in a Brahmana family. Nor did the sages of Naimisharanya hesitate to hear from Suta Goswami the Srimad Bhagavatam because he was born in a low family. So this shows that birth was never a consideration in either giving transcendental knowledge nor in receiving transcendental knowledge. So only in the recent past that when the Vedic culture degraded, people actually made birth as a consideration. So I will just take few more minutes. So then, and also there is a very wonderful verse in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter. Krishna is saying, Ya evam veti purusham prakritim cha gunai saha sarvata vartamanopi na bhuyo nasabhuyo abhijayate. So Krishna is saying, Ya evam veti purusham. One who understands the material nature, Veti Purusham, Prakritim Cha Gunai Saha, and the Supreme Lord, such a person will not take birth again. He will immediately attain liberation regardless of his present position. Sarvata Vartamanopi. So Krishna is saying that If regardless of one's present position, that means whatever may be one's previous background, if a person simply acquires the necessary qualification, if a person understands the transcendental knowledge, he will actually never take birth again. So it is a very important verse. So birth is never a consideration in giving transcendental knowledge. So whatever status of life, whatever background you may have, still there is no loss if you sincerely take to Krishna consciousness. And we also see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like sometimes people oppose this system of monarchy. Like in the Vedic culture, there was one particular king who would actually rule the entire kingdom. He was the autocrat. People say, why this monarchy system is wrong, because people exploited, this king would exploit so many people. But then, it is not something king would be selected blindly, irrespective of the qualification. When a king would not have the qualification, he would not be selected as the king. For example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, this instance comes. There was a king called Vena. So this Vena was elected as king of the king of the particular country. But then later they found this king Vena, he was actually number one like rogue. When King Vena became the king, all the rogues actually flew away from the city. Not because he was a powerful, he was a good king, because he was a bigger rogue. Out of fear of this rogue, all the rogues, small rogues, flew away from the country. But then this king started performing so many atrocities, then all the people, saintly people and the citizens, they were getting so much of a problem. So when the Brahmana saw that this king is a number one rogue, they actually went to advise the king. Why are you actually troubling the citizens? Why are you not following the Dharma? And when the king actually did not listen to the advice of the Brahmanas, they killed the king. So we see especially the point that when a person did not have the qualification, he is not elected as the king. So the qualities are given prominence, not the birth. There's another instance. There was when Dhruva Maharaj, when he actually went back to Godhead, so then they had to elect another king. So Dhruva Maharaj had different sons. The eldest son was known as Utkala. But then he was completely transcendental person. He was not exhibiting having the qualifications of a king, but he was a pure devotee. So although he was the son of Dhruva Maharaj, although he was the eldest son of Dhruva Maharaj, but still they did not elect him as the king. So we again see that they did not simply go by birth. They actually went by the qualifications. So it is very important to understand this thing that Krishna is never using the word Janma, but he is using Guna and Karma. So then, and there is another instance in the Srimad Bhagavatam again, it is mentioned about a personality called Archi, Queen Archi. It is described that this Queen Archi, she had wonderful, beautiful qualities, that her qualities actually increased the beauty of her ornaments. If we see in the modern culture, in order to appear beautiful, they actually they use so much of external means. They want to wear nice dress, or they want to put nice ornaments, they concentrate on the externals. But then in the Vedic culture, what is given in prominence is, it is described that Queen Archi's beautiful qualities actually increase the quality of her ornaments. So that means the Vedic culture, the qualities were internal quality, character was given more prominence than the external appearance and the ornaments and dresses. So we again see the same point. And then another point which Prabhupada mentions in the purport is, what is actually the purpose of the Varnashram system? The purpose of the Varnashram system is to elevate the man from the animal status and ultimately to the point of Krishna consciousness. So in the Varnashram system, different people are given different duties. So Brahmana has different duties, Kshatriya has different duties, etc. But then ultimately one has to come to the point of surrendering to God, Krishna consciousness. Like again, the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is one very nice verse. It perfectly tells this point. It is said, Dharma Swanishrita Pumsam Vishvaksena Katasuya Notpatayet Yathiratim Shrama Yevaki Kevalam. It is mentioned that one may perform all the duties of the different varnas and ashram perfectly. But then if a person does not develop attraction to hearing about God, then it is all just a useless labor. It especially if we see the words used in that verse, it is very interesting. It is said, Shrama Yevahi Kevalam. Shrama means useless labor. And Yeva means certainly. And He means surely. And Kevalam means entirely. So that means, ultimately when a person may follow all the duties and duties mentioned in the different varnas and ashram, but if a person does not take to Krishna consciousness, it is entirely, surely, certainly useless labor. It is just like if a person takes a ticket, goes from VT to Thane, like we're just going around. What is the use? Or one may go in the taxi car, you may say, I'm following all the traffic rules properly. But then, what is the destination? That is important. The ultimate destination is to come to the point of surrender to God. So that is important. So then another one important point, I'll just mention that and then I'll stop. Sorry. So Krishna is saying this verse. Krishna says that, although I have created this Varnashram system, yet I am the non-doer. And yet I am unchangeable. So, in Bhagavad Gita, in different places, Krishna talks about who is the doer. People say, I am the doer, I have done this. So Krishna said in the third chapter, Prakrite kriyamanani gune karmani sarmansha. Krishna says that you are not the doer, but the material nature is the doer. A living entity, because of his false ego, thinks himself to be the doer. But actually the material nature is the doer. So in that verse, Krishna wants to emphasize our position as the tiny souls. Because people may become proud that, okay, I am the doer, I have done this. So Krishna is saying that, oh, you are not the doer, material nature is the doer. And also, people may say that, I have done this activity, so I am supposed to enjoy the results of my activities. I have made so much of profit, so I am supposed to enjoy the money from this. So Krishna is saying, no, you are not the doer, material nature is the doer. So you cannot enjoy the fruits. But then in this verse, Krishna is saying that in the third chapter, Krishna said, you are not the doer, but the material nature is the doer. But in this verse, Krishna says that I am not the doer. One may say, ultimately, material nature is acting under the control of Krishna. So Krishna is the doer. But then Krishna says, even I am not the doer. Akartaram, Krishna is using the word. So why Krishna is saying? Because here, Krishna wants to emphasize our culpability. He wants us to take full responsibility for our actions and the reactions. So one may say, okay, I am not the doer, material nature is the doer, so then I should not be punished for the activities I am doing. So I may do anything and everything. I may perform any sinful activity. So then I should not be punished. So Krishna wants, ultimately Krishna is only doing everything. Material nature is under the control of Krishna only. So since he is the doer, then why should I be punished? One may ask the question. So Krishna is saying that, no, Krishna is saying, although I have created this Varnashram system, I am the non-doer, akartaram. So then one may say, then who is actually the doer of activity? So there are three doers of every activity. One is the living entity, the jiva, and the second doer is the material nature, and the third doer is the Lord Krishna himself. So because ultimately the material nature is working under the control of God. So that is why he is like the ultimate doer. So there are three doers of every activity. But then the primary doer is the living entity. Because he first makes the desire to do the particular activity. Because of that he is the primary doer. So that is why he should get punishments when he does sinful activity. So because he is the primary doer, he will get the reactions. He will get the punishments for his activities. So in this way, Krishna is saying that although I am the creator of this varnashram system, you should know that I am yet the non-doer, being unchangeable. So then in the future verses, in the next verse, Krishna will further explain how he is the non-doer and how he acts and how he does not act and what is the value of understanding these subtle truths, that how Krishna is a non-doer, how he is a doer, etc. That we will see in the future. So just to have a brief recap, today we talked about the glories of transcendental knowledge, what is the difference between material knowledge and transcendental knowledge, the history of transcendental knowledge, why Krishna spoke Arjuna to give this transcendental knowledge, and Krishna's reasons for his appearance, and like why different people approach, if Krishna is fulfilling everyone's desires, why people approach different other people, and why Krishna creates this, what is the basis of Krishna's creating this varnashram system. It is not based on birth, but it is based on guna and karma. And although Krishna has created the system, he is not the doer. There are three doers of activity: living entity, the material nature, and the Supreme Lord. But the primary doer is the living entity. So I stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.